listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for variations on the theme of folk music during KBOO's Folk Strip. Each morning brings you a different DJ and a wonderful variety of acoustic and roots music, both traditional and contemporary. You'll hear the latest from singer-songwriters, happy jigs and reels, bluesy folk, a sea shanty or two, some old favorites, local artists and artists from around the world, a touch of Cajun, a dose of indie, and a smidge of jug band. It's probably the best way on earth to wake up. So let us start your day with a smile. Again, that's every weekday morning from 5:30 to 7 a.m. for KBOO's folk music programs.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, our guests are Sophia Jones from the University of Oregon Student Workers and Chris Sinclair from the United Academics of the University of Oregon. Welcome, Sophia and Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of the things that are happening at the University of Oregon.
Today we are in Portland, Oregon at the University of Oregon Concordia campus, attending the U of O Board of Trustees meeting. The University of Oregon has laid off over 100 workers this year, including union leaders at UAUO, the faculty union, and UOSW, the student workers union, and has announced additional layoffs this week. To fight back, members from UAUO, UOSW, and Graduate Teaching Fellows Federation are traveling to Portland. Tell us what happened.
So we have been in the midst of a fight with the administration over layoffs across all classifications at the University of Oregon. What we are trying to do is to impress on the Board of Trustees the importance of collaboration with the various constituencies on campus when it comes to having to make difficult funding decisions. So the point here is to put voices of affected faculty, students, staff, graduate students in front of the board so they can hear the depth of what we do at the University of Oregon and why it's important to protect the mission of the institution.
I think Chris explained it very well, but yeah, essentially the Board of Trustees public comment is one of the only opportunities that members of the campus community get to speak directly with the board, who are the ultimate like decision-making group in terms of the university budget. And so like Chris said, it was really just an opportunity to try to get as many members from our union and students. We tried to bring some non-worker students to come speak as well, and members of United Academics and GTFF to speak directly about how these budget cuts affect us as students and as people who are involved in the campus community, and essentially encourage them to engage in a more collaborative manner with the Campus Labor Council as well as the University Senate, essentially asking them to recommit to their promise of shared governance with the university like body in a way that we haven't really seen in the last couple months with regard to this new budget, which I think we can get into more of later.
So what are the reasons given by the University of Oregon for these layoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the main reason that I'm aware of that they have communicated the most is that we're in a budget deficit between $25 and $30 million. And it comes as a product of a lack of federal funding for higher education. I believe our state budget was reduced this past year as well. And then the primary, like, third reason that they provided is a lack of enrollment from particularly out-of-state students who, of course, pay a higher tuition than in-state students. And all of that combined creates a deficit.
So I should note that at this point, the deficit that they're talking about is a projected deficit. So the administration makes various projections based on various factors, including federal funding, state funding, tuition, et cetera. And they're projecting a deficit. And they were preemptively trying to solve their budget problem in a very non-collaborative manner over the summer, when most students, faculty, most individuals on campus are not on contract. So this is the reason that we came to Portland to have this conversation, to say we're here, our voices are important, and without us, this is not a university.
What are the real reasons for the layoffs, in your opinion? And what are you demanding of the board?
So I could speak from the viewpoint of faculty. So we had a rather contentious bargaining cycle that wrapped up at the end of March, beginning of April this year, where we were basically fighting for raises to cover inflation was kind of the main topic by the time we got to that point. And we were threatening to strike if we did not get wages that covered, you know, the recent couple years of inflation. This was a contentious battle. I think for years, the administration did not think the faculty had it in them to strike. And so I think part of it is really just an attempt to force the unions into some sort of subjection under their rule, as it were. I think this came down to a rather emotional decision on their part, that they realized that the campus unions are extremely strong, we're extremely coordinated, we work together, and this is a barrier to them doing some of the things that they feel like they have just the right or statutory authority to do. So I do think there was a sense of retribution there. The way that they rolled it out also kind of suggests this. You know, they essentially decided to wait until everybody was off campus in order to start engaging in layoffs and threatened layoffs in a way where they were just weren't going to be individuals on campus to fight back. In spite of that, we did get together and worked with our colleagues at USW and GTFF and SEIU, the Classified Staff Union, and put on a fairly successful campaign to save many jobs. Though I should say, not all jobs were saved. This fight is not over. And so while we can celebrate some aspects of the campaign and our success, I think there's plenty of work still to do on campus to ensure that the university has the people that they need in order to actually fulfill the mission of the organization.
Yeah. Just to add, like, the perspective from our union, we were in a somewhat similar position at the end of the spring term. For a while, it looked like our union would strike the same time as United Academics, and we ended up, U.S. student workers ended up going on strike for 10 days in the middle of spring term, beginning on April 28th. And likewise, like, I don't believe that the administration really thought that we were going to strike throughout the course of bargaining. It really, like, the tone of the university's bargaining team was essentially one of assuming that at some point we would cave in and accept what they had been offering. And we ultimately didn't do that. And we won, like, across the board raises for student workers. And as I said during my testimony at the Board of Trustees, despite that, we are still the lowest paid workers on the campus. And yet over 100, as far as we know right now, over 100 student workers have been laid off over the summer, or their positions have been cut. They haven't been rehired to them, I should say. And like Chris said, organized labor on our campus is the strongest it's ever been. This past year, we have fought in a way that I don't believe is precedented at the university. I've only been here for 3.5 years, but I've never seen it before in my time. Nor have I heard comrades say that they have. And I think that the administration is very aware of the fact that our unions are the biggest threat to the way that the university currently functions. We have the most organized way to rearrange the economic functions of the university, and that we probably will continue to. I mean, I feel like the real reason that we're in a crisis of finances is not because of like union workers getting higher wages, the people who actually make the university run. It's because our administrators make $750,000 every year. Karl Schultz makes, $725,000 a year, and proceeded to give administrators averages of raises from 3% to 9% this past year. And those are the same people who turn around and make the decision to lay off faculty, staff, cut graduate programs and lay off student workers. So it really is, it's hard for it not to feel like retaliation against unions when these are the people who are feeling the people who are feeling the brunt of the cuts are the same people who just a few months ago were standing up to the administration in a really direct way.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. You've been listening to Sophia Jones of the University of Oregon Student Workers Union and Chris Sinclair of the United Academics of the University of Oregon. If you find this information useful, if you like Labor Radio, consider donating to our non-corporate, community-supported, listener-sustained radio station at kboo.fm and make a donation.
Wow. Well, we're seeing similar cuts at other Oregon school districts and public universities like PSU and OSU, and where I work, Portland Community College. Why is this happening across the state?
I think the if we look at history, the reason goes back a couple of decades. In the 90s, Oregon passed Proposition 5, which severely limited the ability of the state to fund both K-12 and higher education in the state. We are among the lowest states in terms of contributions to higher education. And so a lot of this is simply because the state does not actually provide the support necessary for not just the University of Oregon to thrive, but also all of the public universities and community colleges to survive. And this goes down to K-12 as well. So I would say that I think that what needs to happen at the state level is there needs to be some sort of serious discussion about revenue. I think it would be very useful if all of the education unions in the state of Oregon got together and tried to do a repeal of Proposition 5 so that we can get the funding that we need. Currently, the funding that comes to the University of Oregon for Oregon students does not actually cover the education of those Oregon students, even when you include their tuition. So we lose money when we're trying to educate the people of Oregon. And so the way that the University of Oregon has tried to solve this problem is through out-of-state students, right, which pay a significantly higher tuition than in-state. However, that market is extremely competitive. Other states are also going through similar sorts of things, and so they want to either keep their own students for their own revenue. So it's a complicated set of factors, but ultimately I think the solution is going to be in the hands of Oregonians for us to demand from our legislature and our elected leaders that this is important for the economic future of the state and that we really need to fund higher education and K-12 education at all levels in order to be competitive in the modern world.
And I think that, that is one thing that came up throughout the course of the Board of Trustees meeting was that our unions are committed to fighting to make higher education more affordable for Oregonians across the state. And it's something that I'm really looking forward to working on in the next year, is trying to work to have legislation like that repealed and make public universities should be for the public. And currently they are, as we've just described, ours is being managed like a corporation and not like a institution that is responsible to the students and faculty and the community that it's supposed to serve. And one thing to add when talking about, like, there are these cuts happening on a state level and yet different institutions are responding differently. One thing is at Southern Oregon University, the president has taken a 20% pay cut, and their budget deficit, my mom is a staff member there, their budget deficit is about $6 million. So a fraction of what we're dealing with, and their president willingly took a 20% pay cut. So there are different tactics that could be taken to respond beyond lobbying at a state level. The way that our university chooses to respond in this situation is really important to how we've ended up in a crisis of so many workers being laid off as a consequence of the budget deficit that is widespread.
So you mentioned that you thought that the choice of making these cuts during the summer, doing this meeting in Portland, was a way of retribution against the unions and the strength and pressure campaigns of the unions, but also, as I understand it, union leaders. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can go ahead. I mean, as mentioned, both unions, like UA and UO Student Workers, were in a position to strike, and UA reached a contract prior to a strike, and we ended up going on strike. But nevertheless, it was a great show of union power on our campus. And at least within our union, what I can speak to is that it has felt retaliatory. The departments that are facing the bulk of the layoffs or non-reappointments, the student worker positions that are not being reappointed are primarily in departments that were the strongest on our strike. So we've had over 60 layoffs in the dining department where I work. Many, many of my coworkers do not have their jobs anymore, including our union president, May Bracelin, who didn't get reappointed over the summer. And student workers are also facing the same non-reappointments in the libraries, which was also a very strong department, the EMU, the rec center, many other places where a majority of workers were on strike. And so it doesn't feel like coincidental that these are the positions that are facing the bulk of the cuts. And that someone who is very well known by the campus as our union leader, as our president, would be the one who doesn't get reappointed at her job. And likewise, this has happened with several other people who are known to be union leaders in their department, people who would perhaps have gone on to be shop stewards and now are trying to find other jobs. So it's deeply frustrating. And it doesn't really feel coincidental that this is how it would happen.
Mm-hmm. I would like to underscore that as well. Our outgoing president, Mike Urbancic, was laid off in the June round of layoffs as well. And obviously, he led the charge during the strike run-up. As mentioned, we did manage to get a contract without going on strike, but that still incurs a lot of rancor from administrators, and it felt extremely targeted that they were going after people who had been outspoken on campus about these things. Also, like with the UO student workers, if you look at, you know, where we have the highest density of union members in United Academics, some of this is in the departments that were actually very much targeted by the administration. So I'm talking about language departments, I'm talking about religious studies, history, places where we have high union density seemed to be particularly targeted by the administration. I will also say that I'm in the math department, and the math department was also targeted as well, right? And I can say, based on, you know, previous incidents of retaliation from the administration, that I felt like that, not that they were necessarily targeting me specifically, but that is how I felt, that they were trying to make a point to target individuals who had a particular role in the strike campaigns or the strikes in the case of UO student workers. It very much felt like retaliation. And when they did it and how they did it, right, without any sort of collaboration or conversation amongst the individuals who are, again, supporting the mission of the institution, very much felt like they were they had an opportunity, or they thought that they had an opportunity, and they were going to use that opportunity in order to regain some sense of control for themselves.
And yeah, just really on the point of that, the timing of this is especially crucial, like doing it over the summer when there are virtually no students on campus and many faculty aren't even on contract, most student workers aren't working, really like limits the response that the unions are able to make in these circumstances. Had this happened during the school year, I mean, who's to say what would have happened, but I know that the response would have been substantially different than what we're capable of doing over the summer when there's not really a body of students to pull on for support. Or even workers on campus. Some of us aren't even checking our emails to like know that we would be non-reappointed. So yeah, as Chris said, they very much so were intentional with the timing and who was facing these cuts.
You know, there's the administrative mantra, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And, you know, there's enough external things happening to higher ed that this was an opportunity for them to use the crisis in an effort to suppress unionization on campus.
Thank you. You've explained some of what the unions have been doing to fight back up to this point. What do y'all expect to be doing going forward?
Well, I can say a little bit about we have demanded to do impact bargaining over some of the faculty layoffs, right? The idea that you're going to lay off individuals and then just put their work on top of already busy workers is, first of all, not realistic, and secondly, is not allowed by our collective bargaining agreement. All right, so one thing that we're going to be doing is impact bargaining. Now, there is a little bit less power in impact bargaining than in usual contract bargaining, because it's not something that we're allowed to strike over according to Oregon labor law. But nonetheless, the discussions are important, and it will be extremely important for us to ensure that the provisions in our contract for overloads or additional work on top of your usual expectations are going to be met. Another thing that we are doing is we are filing an unfair labor practice against the university because the university essentially would not give us the names of the members that they were laying off. Right. They essentially said, nope, you cannot have that information, in spite of the fact that we are the exclusive representative for everybody in the bargaining unit. Right. So there will be some legal ramifications. Obviously, I don't know how that ULP will be decided, but that is something that we are going to be working on. And finally, this is kind of a tangent, but I think it's extremely important for listeners to realize higher ed is under attack all across the country. And after some of the recent events at around the country, right, what we are seeing is an increase in doxing of faculty, an increase in right-wing agitators coming and trying to identify individuals on campus who are doing something that they don't like in order to get those faculty members in trouble. So this is another angle that we're going to be spending a lot of energy and effort, both with our colleagues across campus, the Campus Labor Council, but also with our national affiliates, to ensure that our members have the tools they need should some right-wing provocateur come for them.
I just wanted to interject real quick. Chris, you said that we don't have the right to strike at the end of impact bargaining. I also believed that, but a few months ago, the attorney for my union sent us a memo explaining that we do have the right to strike at the end of impact bargaining. I was floored when I read that. And in fact, we have implemented that into my union's plan for how to respond to cuts. I will send me your email address and I'll forward you the legal memo, because I think that is an utter game changer. I'm not aware of that ever happening in Oregon. I think it's an area of a little bit like it's technically possible, but no one really knows that because no one's ever done it. But anyway, I just learned that recently, and I feel like broadcasting to the whole state, public sector workers can strike after impact bargaining. Oh my God.
Because I would love to see that memo and share it with my executive council.
Well, I think I can talk a little bit about what our union's been doing. Unfortunately, we don't have impact bargaining rights, at least not in relation to our layoffs. So we do have like an organizing response that we're pursuing. We have been circulating a letter demanding priority retirement for student workers who had their jobs or positions cut as a result of budget cuts, in order to hopefully help those people have job security going forward. So that is something that we're pursuing. And as you could imagine, over the summer, many student workers aren't physically here, and so accessing them is a little bit harder. So I think that we are preparing for in the fall a really strong, like, on the ground organizing approach to circulate that letter and get that campaign really off the ground. I mean, additionally, yeah, like Chris mentioned, we're planning to continue working with the Campus Labor Council. I think that there is a lot of potential for what we could do in response to this. One idea that's been floated is doing a town hall for workers to come speak to labor union leaders directly about the cuts, which I think could be a really beneficial forum. And then the last kind of thing that we're pursuing, or there's two more. One of the other tactics that we have been pursuing is we have a pretty strong relationship with the current student government administration. And so we have been working with them pretty closely primarily so that we can connect the larger student body with these budget cuts. Though student government is perhaps not necessarily the most direct representation of the student body, just in terms of like how many people are aware of what is happening. I do think that that's something that the current student government president really wants to work to amend and to create broader outreach. And so trying to rally the larger student body around the fact that this administration doesn't connect with them when they're planning on cutting entire departments or when they're planning on defunding entire departments, and really trying to make there to be a stronger relationship between the general student body and the unions on campus so as that we can have a more unified response. And then, I mean, as we mentioned, there's potential for there to be statewide statewide labor lobbying to the state government about these cuts and about our funding that I think we are very eager to work on. So multiple avenues for going forward, but looking forward to continuing all of it.
How can our listeners stay in the loop and get involved?
This is a great question. Power to the people, right? The more support that we can get from, just individuals in Oregon who care about education and care about higher education, the better we will be able to fight for that. So right now there is a campaign that we're working on that's about transparency of finances at universities. And part of this is because there is a lot of money that swirls around large universities, and it's not clear where this money goes or how it's spent. So we have a website right now. It's called strengthenuo.org, and it has the planks for this campaign where we're trying to get transparency, not just around university budgets, right, and the projections, the all of the things that we saw for the particular round of layoffs that we just saw, but also around foundations, right? So, for instance, here's an example of something that maybe most Oregonians don't realize. The gifts that are given to the UO Foundation, which fund all sorts of things at the university, are not public. So, the University of Oregon, we were lucky to receive one of the largest donations in history from Phil Knight. He gave a total of $1 billion for the Knight campus. With every gift like that, there is a gift agreement that says, what will the money go for? How is it going to be spent? That gift agreement is not public, right? So, you can imagine billionaires coming in, giving money, making agreements with the university that may or may not be in alignment with the mission of the organization. So what needs to happen is there needs to be something happening at the legislature to say, no, sunshine is important, right? Sunshine on these sorts of gifts is important. University budgets are important public information. Everything we do at this university should be for the people of Oregon, but we need help from the people of Oregon to make these things happen. So I encourage all of your listeners to go to strengthenuo.org. There are a number of different things that you can sign up to do. Some of them are very easy. Send a letter to the governor, right? Write about why higher education is important to the Oregonian or to the Register Guard, right? Have conversations with your friends and other people about how funding for universities and K-12, for that matter, should work in the state. But there's a lot of tools there, and we really hope to be able to activate Oregonians in order to make strides here, because the future of higher ed in this state is at stake.